Dr. Ford versus Judge Kavanaugh. That's what we're going to talk about right now with Christine Flowers, who is a columnist, and she's also an attorney. Her website, and you can read her materials at philly.com. Christine Flowers, thank you so much for joining us, and tell us about this recent thing. And by the way, let me go ahead and timestamp this. This is Jerry Newcomb on Vocal Point, and this is recorded on Friday morning, September 28th, the day after the big hearing and testimony before the U.S. Senate, the Judicial Committee of Dr. Christine Blasey Ford testifying in the morning, and then Judge Brett Kavanaugh testifying in the afternoon. Christine, welcome to the program.
Hi, Jerry. What a pleasure to talk to you. Yes, yesterday was really heartrending. It was one of those situations where, when there's a car accident and they call it the gaper delay because all of the people who are on the highway are driving by and they're craning their necks to look at the accident. It's
yes.
Kind of our human nature, sadly enough, to be attracted, even though we have empathy and compassion as human beings. It's also part of our human nature to be fascinated by an accident or by a tragedy. That's the unfortunate side of our humanity. Well, I think that's what I was overcome by yesterday. I spent about maybe 7 hours out of the 9 of the broadcast of the not the confirmation hearing, but the testimony of Dr. Ford and Judge Kavanaugh, watching television, and I DVR'd the rest of it. And, I was doing my work in my office while I was at my desk, but I also had the television on. And it was almost impossible to take my eyes away from the screen because the humanity, or rather the inhumanity, of what I was seeing on the screen was just so compelling. And I will be upfront. I will be honest at the beginning. My sympathies lie with Judge Kavanaugh because as an attorney, my sympathies lie with the accused, with someone who has been accused of a crime. Obviously, we're not in a court of law here. We're in a court of public opinion. But I think this issue has been raised to such a level that we can no longer simply say that, well, we don't have to worry too much about due process because he's not risking imprisonment or any kind of criminal penalty. Judge Kavanaugh is risking something far more important than his freedom, and that is his reputation, and that is his livelihood, and that is his family. Not that he would lose his family, but the impact on his family, his wife and his two little girls.
Yeah.
On the other hand, I, as a woman, I empathize and I sympathize with any woman who says that she has suffered an assault, has suffered an injury, an abuse. And looking at Dr. Ford, she came off quite authentically, although I must say that voice was off-putting. I wasn't expecting to hear that voice, which sounded like it came from a very young girl or a young woman, from a woman who is my age. I mean, we're contemporaries. But I did hear in her testimony pain. And I don't think she's lying. But as I said to a friend, I said, lying means you know something and you say the exact opposite. Lying is not believing that something is true and saying it, even if factually it's not true.
Right.
So I don't believe that she's lying. And that's how I think she was able to pass a lie detector test, because she believed she was telling the truth. But I don't think she's presented any facts, any corroboration. And that's where my lawyer hat comes back on, Jerry. And I say, when someone, in Shakespeare, in Othello, and don't pin me down to the act, but when Cassio is talking to Iago about losing his reputation, he says something along the lines of reputation, reputation, reputation. Oh, Iago, I have lost my reputation, and all that remains is bestial. The only thing that's left of him. He equates reputation with his soul, and I agree with that. And once that is stripped from you, it's impossible to get it back. And so I truly do sympathize with with Judge Kavanaugh, who I think this was an ambush. These were guerrilla tactics. This brings it into the realm of guerrilla politics. And truly, the villain yesterday, the villain was not Christine Blasey Ford. I mean, this woman is in pain, and I accept that. I saw that. I think it was pretty clear that she really was in pain. The villain in this scenario are, in my opinion, the Democrats in the Senate, in Congress, who have used, I think, this woman as a vessel to advance their political agenda, which is to avenge the fact that Merrick Garland was not put on the court, and also to prevent a conservative voice, another conservative voice, from being placed on the court, someone who is maybe not likely, but there's a very strong possibility that he would vote to overturn Roe versus Wade, someone who is a social conservative, a good Christian Catholic man. And I think that there was a great deal of opposition, and they weaponized the Me Too movement, and the form of their weapon was Dr. Blasey Ford. And so I feel doubly regretful for her, but the target was such a good man. And you could see in Judge Kavanaugh's demeanor at the beginning of his testimony that he was angry. That was raw humanity there. Yeah. And that was the part where I was saying before at the beginning, this is an accident and it's so hard to pull your eyes away from it. It hurt me. It pained me. I started crying when I saw him crying. And I will say something that sounds very sexist, but for me, it is harder to see a man cry than it is to see a woman cry, because we are conditioned in this society for women to be able to show their feelings and their emotions. And I grew up with three brothers and my father, and I have a nephew that I absolutely adore. And I still have a hard time seeing a man cry. To me, that is the depth of agony. And in fact, I mean, if your listeners want to get my opinion on that, that's my column today in the Philadelphia Inquirer and Daily News, how difficult it is to see someone cry in public and how difficult it is to see a man be brought to the edge of, you know, of a total breakdown, tears. So my take on everything that happened yesterday is that it was just an inhumane situation all around, and we're using human beings as pawns for political agendas, and that's nothing new. We do that all the time, but this is dangerous. This is a man's life that is at stake, his reputation, and using a woman's pain, her very legitimate, authentic, sincere, subjective, not objective pain, is just so troubling to me that we would get to this point in this society.
Okay, so now let me ask you this. You know, it's obvious that something terrible happened to Christine Ford. And the question is, though, she said she was 100% sure that Brett Kavanaugh was the bad actor in this. Her story cannot be corroborated. She mentioned specific names of people that were either there or in the party, and they've all sworn under oath, you know, with a big penalty against them if they're lying, that no, I'm sorry, you know, no, I don't know, recollect such a party, and wasn't there, and Brett Kavanaugh is not the guy. And so what are your comments about that? In other words, and by the way, there was a story that came out of nowhere, and it just sort of went back to nowhere, but it said that two guys came forward and said we were the ones that had attempted the sexual molestation of her. Do you remember that story? I mean, it came up in the last day or two, and then it went away. I don't know if there's any validity to that.
Right. And even, I think Dick Durbin, when he was questioning Dr. Ford, mentioned that. He said, you know, we have, there are reports that two men have come and admitted to the, you know, the activity that you're crediting or you're blaming Judge Kavanaugh for. And she responded, no, she was 100% certain that it was Brett Kavanaugh. I don't know what happened to that other story. You're right. It was very strange.
Yeah.
that it was just, it appeared and then it disappeared. And I haven't heard anybody raise it again. It was just one of those bizarre blips.
Absolutely bizarre. And this whole thing has been bizarre. But let me ask you this, since you're an attorney as well as a columnist, let's talk for a moment about repressed, retrieved memories. And I want to start by giving an anecdote. I believe I have a really good memory, generally. Okay. And for years, I mean, more than 30 years, I believed that this one certain girl, I knew her name. I'm not going to say her name on the air, but that we were both in grade school, this Catholic grade school, and John F. Kennedy was shot. We got the announcement, and he was dead. The first Catholic president of the United States was killed. And that girl turned to me and said, I'm not going to go home and play today. I'm going to go home and pray today. Now, I'm positive that that happened, that this little girl said that to me on that fateful afternoon when we learned the bad news. But I got to see her at a school reunion 30 years after our graduation and, you know, spoke with her about it. And she said, I'm sorry, but you got the wrong person. I was at home sick that day. And I'm like,
wow.
You got to be kidding me. For more than 30 years, I remember that it was you. And, you know, I don't want to mention her by name. I'm sure it happened. I just don't remember that I had the right person. And so I bring that up because, you know, memories can be faulty. What are your thoughts as an attorney about memories?
Oh, memories are absolutely faulty. And what happens, and that's why we have statutes of limitation in the law. I'm sure you've heard of the abuse scandal up here in Pennsylvania in the Catholic Church and in even one of my archdioceses in Philadelphia. And a lot of the problems that we have is they're now trying to pass legislation that would essentially abolish the statutes of limitations for filing any kind of claims against abusers, or open a window for that statute. And one of the big problems is memory. Memory is not reliable. It's and the interesting thing is Dr. Ford is a specialist in memory. If you remember, she was talking yesterday about what incidences remain in the, she called it the hypothalamus, what the part of the brain that retains memory. We have a tendency as humans to reshape and reframe events and memories so that they're either bearable for us or they fit the story that we want it to be. And so
cognitive dissonance.
All memories, I'm sorry?
Yeah, cognitive dissonance.
Exactly,
yeah.
Exactly. So I do think that our memories to some extent are accurate generally, but to have nothing but your memory and to try and either, you know, take someone's freedom or reputation away from them based on your memory of something, you simply can't do that, especially with the passage of time. I think, as you said, there's very little corroboration for Dr. Ford's, objective corroboration for Dr. Ford's story, other than things that she has said to other people. But those are all subjective assessments that she has made based on her memory. I have been told that I have had memories, that the memories that I had, just like you, are faulty. And to this day, I would swear on a Bible that the things that I remembered were accurate and true, and yet objectively they weren't. Mm. So the memory is not accurate.
That is a fascinating point. Okay, what about the point that she claimed she couldn't testify on Monday because she was going to drive, because she doesn't fly, because she's been so traumatized, and the prosecutor basically showed she flies a lot, actually.
Oh yeah, I mean that was a slam dunk moment. That was amazing, and she came back and saying, "Well, it's okay. I'm okay flying if I'm flying to a vacation spot." Well, that completely undermines her fear of flying. I mean, you know, your fear of flying should be the fact that you're flying, not depending upon where you're flying to. So I think that really undermined her testimony as well. I think the prosecutor did a very good job.
Okay, we're out of time. Thank you so much for joining us. Philly.com for more information. Christine Flowers. Appreciate it, Christine. Thank you.
Thank you, Jerry.
Okay, bye-bye.